We're going through, and I forgot my prop again. We're going through the Meeting Jesus at the Table book, which if I had remembered, my prop would be right here. And I do encourage you to read through that book. We covered, we touched on chapter 1 last week with the bread and the story of the feeding of the multitude. And this week we're touching on the invitations that Jesus sends out. And so I'd like to start by talking about the type of tables, or reading about the type of tables that God sets, by reading Psalm 23. And I know Psalm 23 is a very familiar psalm. In fact, someone said, if you know any chapter in the Bible in its entirety, chances are you know Psalm 23. So it's a familiar psalm, but it's also a radical psalm in addition to being a comfort. So let's listen to Psalm 23 and see if you might catch something in the psalm that you haven't caught before. Psalm 23, a psalm of David. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in right paths for his name's sake. Yea, even though I walk through the darkest valley, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long. I'd also like to read our gospel lesson for today. Matthew 9, verses 9 through 13. This is the story of Jesus calling a disciple, and it's only appropriate we read this out of the Gospel of Matthew because it's Jesus' call of Matthew. It says, as Jesus was walking along, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax booth, and he said to him, follow me. And he got up and followed him. And as he sat at dinner in the house, many tax collectors and sinners came and were sitting with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? But when he heard this, he said, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have come to call not the righteous, but sinners. These things are the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. So I want to start by talking about the Gospel of Matthew. And as I said, Matthew 9 is a call story. It's Jesus calling Matthew, and as a call story, it follows a typical pattern of a call story. So you might remember the call of Saul becoming Paul and how that took place. Matthew's call is a little bit different, but the elements are kind of the same. One of the big differences is that Saul was called by a vision, and that Matthew was called by a person standing in front of him. So the call story starts with the situation of the person who's being called. For Saul, that was he was persecuting Christians. For Matthew, it was he was sitting at the tax booth. Matthew's a tax collector. And what you have to know about tax collectors is their requirement was that they give a certain amount of money to the next person up in the food chain. And it didn't matter how much they collected in order to do that. So tax collectors were extorters. Tax collectors were people who took advantage of their neighbors, who took advantage of their hometowns. Tax collectors were pretty universally reviled, and certainly in the Bible they're reviled. So that's the situation, but then the call happens. And for Saul, that was a blinding light and Jesus appearing in this vision. And for Matthew, it was just Jesus was walking along and he saw Matthew and said, come, follow me. But then there's this magical moment of transformation, which is an essential part of a call story. For Saul, it was saying, okay, this Jesus who I have been persecuting is someone worth listening to. I will go where he tells me to go next. For Matthew, it was similar. Get up and I go and I sit down and eat with Jesus. The table of a teacher that I wouldn't have sat down with otherwise. And then there's the effect of the call. Something changes in the world. For Saul, becoming Paul, he influenced the spread of Christianity throughout the Roman Empire. For Matthew, one of the first effects that we see is right here in this story, that suddenly the Pharisees notice something is different about this teacher, and in particular, who he's willing to call, who he's willing to invite. And so there's this little passive-aggressive thing. And imagine this, you know, the Pharisees are, you know, sitting there at this dinner party, and Jesus is there, and Matthew's there, and they're like, why is Jesus sitting with, you know, tax collectors and sinners? Like, Matthew can't hear them. Like, Jesus can't hear them. Right? It's very passive-aggressive. And Jesus overhears, and we get this beautiful little answer that those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Implying that if Matthew's a tax collector, he's sick. He's got something that's going wrong in his life. But doesn't that mean he needs me all the more? Okay. And I'm good with the passage up until that point. This story makes sense. And then we get this non sequitur, which I feel like comes out of nowhere. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. What? Well, nobody was talking about sacrifice. We were talking, I guess, about mercy, but where did this come from? So I want to dive into this a little bit. Because what Jesus is doing here is he's quoting from the minor prophet from the Old Testament, from the Hebrew Bible, Hosea. So this is something that Hosea related to the people in his time that was coming from God. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, is what God says to the people. It's a story that Hosea tells of how Israel was getting everything wrong. Israel was being punished for not doing what God wanted them to do. And God comes back to them and says, you're not focusing on the right thing. You're adhering to the letter of the law without adhering to the spirit of the law, and therefore you're missing the point. So the Israelites, they're too focused on the law, and bad things are happening to them. And the thing is, they're probably not even sure why these bad things are happening, because we're doing what it says in the Bible. We're being good people. We're following all the rules about sacrifice, and we're following the law of Moses. Why is this happening? Because they're forgetting to follow other parts of the law that are perhaps more important. Loving your neighbor, loving God, not just making it transactional. Showing obedience to God out of gratitude for what God has done, and not out of fear for what God might do to you if you don't comply. Mercy. Forgetting mercy, which is a huge part of the Hebrew Bible. And now you can start to see the parallels between the situation of the Israelites in Hosea's time and the situation of the Pharisees. The Pharisees, too, were very focused on getting the law right and following all of the rules and forgetting that it's not about being perfect so that God can accept you, but that God accepted them so that they could start working on getting it right. That God invited them to be part of this holy nation when they were born, not when they started following all the laws correctly. So the Pharisees focused too much on how to exclude other people who weren't getting it right. And they're forgetting the Old Testament story that we read last week even. God saw the Israelites complaining in the wilderness, and God could have said, well, until you shape up and fix your attitude, you aren't getting squat. And instead, God said, even while you're complaining, I'm going to give you manna. Even while you're complaining against me for saving you, I'll make sure you have enough to eat. What this teaches us about God is that God desires mercy more than God desires the right rituals, the right adherence to the rules of religion. God desires mercy more than outward righteousness. God would rather that the Pharisees forget to follow the rules and welcome Matthew at the table. And that tells me that God's welcome is just fundamentally different from our welcome. Because no matter how hard we try as humans, our welcome has limits. You know, I think about when speaking of inviting people to parties, when Karina and I did our wedding, that invitation list, that was tough. It was tough. And if you've ever been part of wedding planning, you might know this. How do you choose who to invite? How do you choose who gets a plus one and who doesn't? Because the more people you invite, the costs ratchet up. Right? So at some point you have to limit and say, this is what's realistic. And that's tough. Sometimes you want to invite the whole world. And that's true here at church too. You know, we love inviting people here in church, but eventually we're going to exceed the capacity of this building and the fire marshal is going to show up, and that's a problem. Right? So we have limits. That's a really good problem to have, and we'll deal with that when we get there. But there are some limits that we, as human beings, have to adhere to. Maybe you can think of some others. But the question that I want to think about is, what's our goal in this? Is our goal to make sure that we don't invite too many people so that we stay far away from those limits? Or is our goal to invite as many people as possible and deal with the limits in some other way once we've figured out how to welcome everybody? Is it welcome first or is it limit first? And when I look at what Covenant has said about itself, it's clearly welcome first. We're a place where God's love has the run of the house, and we want people to experience that love. We want to share the joy of God's table. Everyone is welcome. And that's Jesus' goal too. His emphasis on grace and forgiveness doesn't mean he doesn't want Matthew to change and leave behind those old habits, but he's going to welcome first. He's going to welcome before the transformation, because remember that order of the call story. There's the call, but then there's the transformation. And the transformation doesn't happen before the call. The call happens first. We get transformed through our encounters with God, not before we get in the door. God doesn't call perfect people. God transforms imperfect people. So in that light, I want to listen to Psalm 23 a little bit differently. Psalm 23 is a psalm of comfort, sure. But as Rabbi Harold Kushner writes, if our lives are embittered by unpleasant people, this psalm teaches us how to deal with them. This psalm teaches us how to get to that radical welcome that God has. When an enemy sits at our table, Psalm 23 has a lesson for us. Now, some people have interpreted that line to say, well, God is trying to make me look good in the presence of my enemies by preparing that table for me. And others, including Harold Kushner, say that there's a contrast between the way the enemies disappoint us, let us down, and the way that God, who sets the table, does not disappoint us. But there's one person, Lois Einhorn, who's a professor at Binghamton University, said something that I thought was particularly profound. When God sets the table, God changes our relationship with so-called enemies. God redefines them as people who are welcome just like us. Elsewhere, we hear this from Jesus. Pray for your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. Forgive your enemies. Forgive them 70 times, 7 times. When God prepares the table, when Christ welcomes people, we find enemies becoming friends. We find ourselves called and transformed despite our brokenness. When Jesus invites Matthew to the table, he's not just inviting us to the table alongside Matthew, but he's inviting us to notice how that changes our world, how that invites us to start being people who welcome, people who seek to understand, people who try to provide a place for others to be, people who prioritize mercy over sacrifice. Lois Einhorn shares a Hasidic story that embodies this. So a rabbi was asked one day by a student, how can one tell when the new day has come? The rabbi revered the question, as rabbis are wont to do, and asked his student, you tell me how you can know. The student guessed, is it when the rooster crows to signal a new dawn? No. Is it then perhaps when one can discern the silhouette of a tree against the sky? No. And then the rabbi said, the surest way to know when the night is over and when a new day has come is when you can look into the face of a stranger, the one who is so different from you, and recognize them as your sibling. Until that day comes, it will always be night. So, friends, may God grant us strength to endure until the new day and the courage to welcome and hasten the dawn. Amen.